Into one of the fastest growing parapolitical podcasts out there in podcast land. Yes, you are now tuned in to The Paranormal Patriot with your host, as always, wearing the tinfoil hat. My name is Tom Velasquez. Thank you for joining me this week. Now, I'm making a conscious effort to kind of steer clear of politics because last week's show, the last couple of shows, I've kind of eliminated as much politics as I can, and those shows are taking off. I got a feeling people are burned out on politics, and to be honest with you, so am I. But a lot of people, Mike Odo, one of the new Paranormal Patriot Facebook fans, and a former recipient of the Question of the Week, sent me a message on Facebook saying, "Hey, great show, love the lack of politics, keep it up." That sentiment was echoed by a lot of different people. People, I think, right now are tired of politics. They're tired of the lies, the deception, the back and forth, and generally the hatred that is coming out of the political scene left and right in this country right now. It's something that you can only take in small doses. I was eating mine breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I got burned out on it. So I want to take these next couple shows and turn them into a paranormal type show, but that does not mean that the tinfoil hat doesn't stay on, because on top of those paranormal subjects, we're going to get into some government conspiracies and conspiracies in general, and we're going to talk about some of those today. But as much as I tried not to bring it up when it first happened, and I think I succeeded, I think I had a 30-second clip on it way back when, I feel I have to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, because a lot of people, more people than not, to be honest with you, think there's a cover-up afoot. Now, let's be completely honest with ourselves here. When this man was arrested, we knew that in the back of our heads, I said it, and I said it to a lot of people, this guy will not survive prison. Now, whether it was him committing suicide or somebody killing him remained to be seen. Because let's be honest, Jeffrey Epstein had a lot of dirt on a very large amount of high-profile, very influential politicians and celebrities. So a lot of people wanted him dead. Well, he tried to commit suicide. Or so they say he tried to commit suicide. There are reports that are kind of sketchy. I'm not sure if I believe them or not. That say, prior to him being killed this past time, he was told that they're trying to kill me. But they found him on the ground in the fetal position in his cell, still alive. So, what did they do? They placed him into 24-hour suicide watch. Now, what happens when you are in 24-hour suicide watch? First off, you're in isolation. There is no one in that cell. You are in that cell all day, all night. You do not leave that cell. On the floor, there is a mattress. You may get a very, very, very extra thick blanket that is literally impossible to make a noose of, because hanging is the most common way of committing suicide in prisons, is hanging. So you have a mattress. You have a very thick, heavy blanket that you cannot roll up and make into a noose. Plus, you have 24-hour surveillance on you at all times. You have guards doing checks all times. But on top of that, and I just learned this recently because I have a buddy that works at the Jackson Prison down here in Michigan. It's a state prison that's maximum security. That's where the worst of the worst go. And he told me, hey, Tom, when we have a prisoner on suicide watch, 24-hour suicide watch, he gets a mattress, maybe an air mattress, and one of the thick blankets. Plus, we put him in an anti-suicide smock. And I'm like, what is that? He says, well, we call them turtle shells. But what it is essentially they are noose-proof. You cannot make a noose out of what you are wearing. They are quilted out of nylon cordura, which is an exceptionally tough material that's approximately 10 times stronger than Levi's jeans. The smocks are so resilient, they cannot be torn, and they are so thick that they cannot be folded or rolled into cords. Now, on top of that, the shoulder seams, they unfasten under pressure. So this means the armholes, they cannot be used as makeshift nooses either. The anti-suicide smocks are so bulky that flames burn out quickly in the adjustable openings at the chest and the shoulders. They are lined with Velcro rather than zippers or hard hooks and loops. If an inmate does manage to harm himself, it's easy for medical personnel to remove the smocks since they are sleeveless and open down the front. So this is what Jeffrey Epstein was dealing with. He was in a room where nobody else was, had cameras on him 24/7, had maybe an air mattress and maybe a blanket that was so thick you couldn't make it into a noose. Plus, he was wearing an anti-suicide smock or a turtle shell, which pretty much eliminated the ability for him to hang himself. But yet, according to the news, he did. Now, here is where I have a couple of issues, and I'm sure you have a couple of issues. First off, if he is under 24-hour suicide watch, where did he get the time and what did he use to hang himself? Supposedly, there are cameras pointed at him where he can't go into a corner and hide. That room is completely covered by cameras. Why did they not see anything? Now, don't be surprised. And listen, when you hear this happen, say, oh my God, I heard it on the Paranormal Patriot. Do not be surprised if when it comes to releasing the footage, oh yeah, the cameras, they weren't working at that time. Because that is a convenient excuse. Now, first off, if you have a jail, one of the most secure jails prisons in New York, there is no excuse to have a camera system not working in a suicide watch situation. If you find out, hey, Sergeant, the cameras on Jeffrey Epstein, they're not working, move them to a different cell, get them on cameras that are working. You don't still say, oh, well, hopefully he doesn't kill himself. I don't know how he could, but let's hope not. Something is fishy there. Now, I'm not sure how many times the guards go around to make their rounds, but I'm assuming on a suicide watch victim, it's quite a bit. How does this happen? Where did he get the material to hang himself? Now, what I find odd, and nobody I've talked to picked up on this, even the mainstream media, you had the jail say, yeah, he committed suicide. He committed suicide in his cell. Even every single CNN, MSNBC, Fox, every single major news outlet is still using the terminology apparent suicide. Now, is that just terminology? Is that a subliminal message? Or do they really not think something's on the up and up? Something doesn't add up here. Now, I'm going to go and give you another conspiracy theory that, you know, the guy's loaded. He has friends in high places. And I'm going to tell you, I would not be surprised that this is actually the truth. There are rumors out there that this guy's alive and well. He's getting facial reconstruction surgery, and he's going to be living down in an island somewhere. Just to get rid of him and just say, shut up. Do not say a word. Is it possible? Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you pay off the right people, you know, to pay off the warden, hey, you want your family and your family's family to be set? Make this happen. Now, I've seen the pictures and the video showing the picture of Epstein's body on the gurney, which is just his head that you can see, and a picture of him when he was alive, and the ear doesn't match up. There's things that don't match up. And here we're going to get into the Paul McCartney is dead thing, where they say Paul McCartney was beheaded in a car accident, and they had a replacement and did some plastic surgery. This is different on this guy. This is different on this guy. Here is where we're splitting hairs. You know, would I love to see this guy dead? Yes. This guy was a complete pervert, pedophile, had no business being anywhere on this planet. My issue is, how convenient is it that this guy's dead and now he can't name names? I haven't had a chance to read it, but there's a memo out now that was released the day before he committed suicide that started naming names. Prince Albert, or Andrew, I think it was, the Lord of York, is prominently figured into that, and he was prominently figured into that in 2015 before the House of Commons in England said, man, there's not enough evidence to convict this guy of anything. Well, there's people on there now that say, hey, this guy was here, he was having sex with minors, this is all over. Clinton was there, Trump was there. Everybody's getting implemented in this, and all of a sudden, he's gone. Dead men can't talk. So if he was suicided, who do you blame? Well, of course, the first one you blame are the Clintons. Listen, I'm going to make a point here. I don't care how many people you know. It is not possible, unless you are two people, Bill and Hillary Clinton, it is not possible for you to have that many people die under mysterious circumstances. And oh, by the way, those people had the dirt on you. You know, there's a lot of talk about the Clinton suicide list. And at first, I'm like, I don't know. But again, you don't have that many acquaintances, close acquaintances, just all of a sudden get killed by shooting themselves in the back of the head. Makes no sense. By dying in a plane crash or hanging themselves while on 24-hour surveillance watch in a room where there's nothing to hang yourself with. I want to hear what he supposedly hung himself with. And I want to see where he got it, how he made it, and how, because honestly, in that room, for you to hang yourself, you have to fabricate and manufacture your own little noose. If he had to do that, that took some time. Now, here's my biggest thing on this whole thing. Let's just say he committed suicide and it was by hanging, okay? If that's the case, the guards on duty, the warden of that prison or jail, whatever you call them now, they need to be put on trial for gross negligence. William Barr is starting an investigation into this as to how this honestly could happen, and good for him. You know, it's hard. It is really, truly hard to commit suicide on suicide watch. From everything I've read and from the corrections officer I talked to, he said it's damn near impossible unless it is gross negligence. In other words, somebody's sleeping in front of the cameras, somebody's playing cards instead of doing walking of the cells. Somebody's got to pay for this. So if this is not a cover-up, there will be an investigation and there will be heads rolling. No pun intended. If that doesn't happen, then that just feeds the flame that this was a cover-up, that there's something deeper going on. Because somebody has to be held responsible for this. You can't put an inmate on suicide watch and just let it go. Now put this in a timeline. He's fabricating a noose. He has to take something inside of that room, take it apart, and tie it into a noose. That isn't a 30-second routine. That is 4, 5, 6, 10 minutes. Or let's, and I'll be honest, I don't know if suicide watch victims receive any guests, but let's just say he received a guest and that guest gave him a handcrafted noose. He still has to find something to hang himself on. And from what I understand, there's nothing to hang yourself on. There's nothing that you can tie that up to high enough to kill yourself. But let's say there were. He would have to find something to stand on to get up that high and tie it. Again, I'll give you 5 minutes for that. If there was somebody manning those cameras that didn't check on that for 5 minutes, and then the guy jumps off whatever he jumped off of and hung himself, you die most of the time of suffocation, which is 2 minutes. So let's just say 7 minutes. So what you're telling me is a gentleman who's already supposedly tried to commit suicide, you've got him on 24-hour suicide watch, was unattended for 7 minutes, and that was the miraculous time that he decided to commit suicide. It doesn't add up. It doesn't add up for a lot of people, and I want to get to the bottom of this. So if there are no indictments as for gross negligence, something's up. Something smells in Denmark. Let me know what you think. GhostSeeker4@charter.net. Again, GhostSeeker4@charter.net. Now, before we get to our first break, I want to acknowledge the new Facebook fans of the Paranormal Patriot this week. Tom Turpin, thank you for joining us. Dale Lovell and Chris Landon are all now fans of the Paranormal Patriot on Facebook. If you haven't liked the page, please do so. I'm diligently trying to add content, give you videos, give you stories. It's a work in progress. I'm still trying to master this social media thing, but I'm giving you the option. If you find a story that you think the listeners of the Paranormal Patriot and the fans of the Paranormal Patriot Facebook page would like, post it. If for some reason I don't like it, like it's, hey, I can get you this for $50, or hey, if you want to make money, do this, I'll take it off. I don't care. But go to the page, like the page, I'll add stuff. If you, as our listeners, as our community, want to add something, go ahead. And don't forget the Paranormal Patriot on Instagram. I just started it, still can't figure the damn thing out. I don't know how to make a post. I don't know anything. I'm working on it. So, thank you to our new followers on the Facebook page. Get your friends involved. Send this page to your friends. Let's get this rolling. Let's get more people involved in the Paranormal Patriot. Again, I want to expose the paranormal, supernatural, and conspiratorial side of things to more and more people. And it's only with your help that I can do so. So all of you who have liked the page, share it. Send it to one of your friends who has the same views that you do. Hey, you might want to like this page and listen to this show. You might get a kick out of it. If you can do that, I would be forever grateful. So thank you again. Keep it up. I'm enjoying the interaction. I'm enjoying the fact that Michael, you sent me a message. All the emails that I get every week, keep it up. I love them. If you haven't sent an email yet, just send an email. Say hi. Let me know you're listening to the show. GhostSeeker4@charter.net. All righty, we're going to come back. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you about maybe a nefarious little secret that our government, they might have given to us as a gift. Not really a gift, though. If you have or know anybody with Lyme's disease, you need to listen to this segment. So sit back, relax, open that mind. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back. Hey, everybody, this is Tom Velasquez, the host of The Paranormal Patriot, which can be heard every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up. Are you intrigued by the paranormal? Do conspiracies excite you? Do you like to talk about ghosts, UFOs, or cryptids, or just politics in general? If so, my show, The Paranormal Patriot, is for you. Tune in every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up. September 21st and September 22nd, 2019, at the Mothman Museum in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The 18th annual festival that celebrates the legend known only as Mothman in downtown Point Pleasant, West Virginia. There will be live music, guest speakers, special appearances and events, festival food, a TNT area tour, a Mothman statue, Mothman hayride, you'll visit the Mothman Museum, and much more. This is the Mothman Festival. So be there September 21st and 22nd in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Okay, there may be a majority of my listeners that either deal with or know somebody that is suffering with Lyme's disease. Lyme's disease is a horrific condition that basically debilitates the person who has it. I know two people that have Lyme's disease. One of the guys I used to work with, his daughter who contracted it at 16 years old, literally is, for the most part, not functioning. She has a couple good days, the majority of them bad days. We have a friend of ours that lives in the town we have. My daughter is friends with her daughters that it's painful to see. She just can't function. She has a hard time getting up, doing anything. Her body is almost like fighting itself. Anything chemical-wise she gets by, it irritates her. She's lost a ton of weight, and I mean, I hate to say she's dying, but it's pretty bad. And I wish to God I could do anything or something for her, but you can't. There's nothing you can do for it because our illustrious insurance industry in this country does not deem Lyme's disease as a condition that needs to be treated by insurance. So anybody that has Lyme's disease, if you are diagnosed with Lyme's disease, you aren't going to be covered because there's not an insurance out there that covers Lyme's disease, and that's a travesty. Look, you're sick. You are going through hell. And the insurance companies are saying, well, okay, whatever. I didn't get that tick bite. Great. Okay, we'll cover AIDS. I didn't sleep with that person, but we'll cover them. But we won't cover somebody that was just walking through the woods, walking through a field, or just happened to run across a tick that got into their system and infected their system with what's called Lyme's disease. But now we know Lyme's disease is not covered by insurance. Odd. I don't know why. It's kind of relatively just coming up. I mean, honestly, when you were a kid, I'm 47. When I was a kid, I'd never heard of Lyme's disease. Ticks weren't a bad thing. But now all of a sudden, you can see signs all over saying, oh, watch out for ticks, watch out for ticks. This is how you remove ticks. If you get tick on you, you got to do this, burn them, don't tear off the head, whatever. Congress has now called on the Pentagon's Inspector General to launch an investigation into whether the Defense Department used ticks and other insects as biological weapons. Now, this is according to American Military News, a pretty reputable site. It's from July of this year. Congress is calling on the Pentagon to come clean and say, hey, did you use insects as biological weapons? Now, an amendment was introduced last week by New Jersey Representative Chris Smith, who said significant, and I'm quoting this, significant research has been done at U.S. government facilities, including Fort Detrick, Maryland, and the infamous, I'm using the word infamous, but and Plum Island, New York, to turn ticks and other insects into bioweapons. Now, Bitten, which is a book that was produced this year, suggests there could be a connection between defense experiments and the spread of Lyme's disease. These experiments with these insects and with essentially these diseases are thought to have happened between 1950 and 1975. Now, should the Defense Department be found guilty of weaponizing Lyme's disease, the amendment calls for a report detailing the scope of the weaponization and whether any ticks or insects used in such experiments were released outside any laboratory by accident or experimental design. It was voted on during a House debate session on the fiscal year 2020 defense authorization bill that was passed on July 20th. Okay, a member of the Congressional Lyme Disease Caucus, Representative Max Rose, who is a Democrat from Staten Island / South Brooklyn, said ticks are incredibly dangerous, and he supports all local and national efforts to address issues surrounding ticks, issues that Staten Island residents are all too familiar with. Rose also co-sponsored the National Tick-Borne Diseases Control and Accountability Act, which creates a new structure for oversight and coordination of all tick-borne disease activities and provides for the enhancement of federal activities relating to diagnosis, surveillance, prevention, and research. Lyme disease cases in Staten Island decreased about 29% on Staten Island from 2017 to 2018 and declined in New York City for the first time since 2014. Although borough president James Odo, hey Mike, any relation? James Odo had expressed skepticism about the numbers, pointing out the fact that only 55% of healthcare providers responded to the city Department of Health's request for clinical confirmation of Lyme's disease. Which makes sense. If Lyme's disease is not something that the insurance is going to cover, listen, I know a lot of good doctors. And a lot of those good doctors are going to know you have Lyme's disease. But they're just going to say, you don't have Lyme's disease, trust me. I'm going to say you don't have Lyme's disease, and we'll treat you for Lyme's disease because your insurance isn't going to cover it. So they'll call it something like fibromyalgia. They'll call it something else. But it'll be Lyme's disease. So it makes sense only 55% of the people or the respondents responded as a Lyme's disease case. So the question is, would our government, our illustrious, all-loving government, do this to us? Would they weaponize ticks? And would they inadvertently or purposely release them to the public to see how everything works out? Well, I'll give you the quick answer, and that is yes. Because throughout the history of the U.S. government, they have managed to keep secrets hidden from the public. And a lot of those secrets are, we're just going to release this toxin. We're going to release this disease. We're going to release this strain of bug, whatever, onto the public and see what happens. You don't believe me? How about the Tuskegee syphilis study? The U.S. Public Health Service conducted the Tuskegee syphilis study beginning in 1932. In which a total of 600 African-American men were chosen to be involved in the study, 399 with syphilis and 201 without. Those with syphilis were denied proper treatment for the disease. The government wanted to ensure that they were able to track its progression without interruption by medication. The men were never given the option to participate in the study because they were never told it was an experiment. The experiment was only supposed to have lasted for 6 months, but it became a long-term study that lasted for up to 40 years. When penicillin became the main drug to treat syphilis, the patients were denied access and weren't given the option to opt out of the study. In exchange, they were given free medical exams and burial services. Hey, what a great idea. Hey, we'll give you free trips to the doctor to tell you you're dying of syphilis, and then when you die, we'll bury you for free. How about that? Don't you love our government? We're the best thing. Unbelievable. A lawsuit was later filed, and the government granted free burial services to all the surviving patients. What a wonderful, loving government. Hey, we gave you syphilis. We denied you proper medical treatment, knowing that you're going to die of this disease. We got caught. We'll bury you for free. Where's that pine box? Somebody dig a hole. That's about what it is. How about the Statesville Penitentiary Malaria Study? That was conducted by the U.S. government in the 1940s at Statesville Penitentiary, which is located in Illinois. It involved over 400 prisoners who were illegally infected with malaria and subjected to studies. The goal was to test experimental drugs in an effort to find a cure for the disease. In addition, the tests were administered and documented solely by the prisoners themselves. So not only were they the patients, they were the proctors. The prisoners also decided which of them would take part in the experiment. The testing process counted towards their sentence and allowed some of them to serve much less time. The prisoners would also choose who was eligible to receive a reduced sentence. However intriguing this may have been from the prospect of the patients, the experimental drugs often had irreversible side effects. One of the most famous prisoners involved in this experiment was Nathan Leopold, who many may recognize from the Leopold and Loeb murder case in 1924. He stated that the prisoners would also deal with the horrifying side effects without complaint. Now, despite the immorality of this whole procedure, the public looked at it as, oh, what a good idea. Those prisoners, they don't deserve to deal with what we deal with. Let's inject them full of poison in malaria for the benefit of us all. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not how a human being should think. There's got to be better ways to deal with this. Our government didn't think so, so they tested malaria on prisoners. Okay. So you're still not convinced that our government will test diseases or biological warfare on its own citizens? Let's go to September 1950. The U.S. Army was involved in a secretive experiment to test the possibility of biological warfare near the West Coast. They did so by releasing biological weapons into the streets of San Francisco to test their effects. They released a type of bacteria to gain information on how it would affect the population. This was all done without the citizens' consent. By the end of Operation Sea Spray, six different biological warfare tests had been performed on the residents of San Francisco. These releases killed many people and hurt several more. The government then concluded that it is very likely for a coastal city to be affected by such warfare. Really? You spray chemical warfare products. You spray biological weapons on an unsuspecting populace and then say, yep, they're susceptible to this on the coast. I don't care if it was San Francisco or Des Moines, Iowa, wherever you spray this stuff, the citizens are going to be susceptible. One of the many deaths caused by this experiment was Edward Nevin. He died after bacteria from the government testing spread from the urinary tract to his heart. Other cases soon followed him, but many were cured after a long and torturous hospital stay. I mean, what would you do? Honestly, what would you do if you are all of a sudden really, really sick and you find out your sickness is caused by the government? I would be furious. I have no idea how I would handle this. I have fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. And the doctors, I've had half my doctors tell me this isn't real. And I've had some doctors tell me, oh, it's real, but we have no idea where it's coming from. How do I know this isn't a government experiment that I was exposed to that has made my life a living hell. Every day I go through hurting. I wake up in the morning, I can barely move. Once I start moving, my joints are always moving. I'm always tired. I have my temperature gauge in my body is all out of flux. I'll be sitting there sweating all of a sudden. I'll be there cold as hell. How do I know that isn't part of a government experiment? We've heard of chemtrails. How do I know that that wasn't from chemtrails? Morgellons disease. This is a disease associated with Lyme's disease, but they ridicule it, saying, oh, these people are psychotic. They believe they have parasites roaming through their body. How do we know that isn't a government experiment? Now, I know there's some people out there saying, oh, well, Tom, come on now. This is in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. There's nothing new. Okay. How about the experiments involving the measles vaccine that were conducted from 1990 to 1991 by the Centers for Disease Control? Those doctors wanted to know if they could use it to replace natural antibodies in babies. Now, to test this, doctors injected thousands of babies in the Third World with the drug. Now, this vaccine, it eventually led to several immune problems in the babies and caused many deaths. Now, the exact number of deaths is not known. Knowing, and this is our illustrious government, they sent these vaccines or this antibiotic, whatever they want, whatever this chemical, this test to third world country babies. Babies, everybody, babies. Knowing that it's killed many. Knowing that it's giving them immune system deficiencies. Knowing that the drug had these effects, the government still tested on African-American and Hispanic babies in Los Angeles, on our soil. They injected more than 1,500 babies in the United States with the experimental drug. However, the study came to an abrupt end when it was discovered that the African children were dying at an alarming rate up to 3 years after receiving the vaccinations. The CDC later admitted that the parents were unaware that their children were being injected with an experimental drug and that had not yet been verified by the FDA. You have your child. You have a member of the U.S. government. The U.S., which is the epitome of this planet, has the best health care in the world. Ma'am, let me inject your child with this revolutionary drug. Boom, injection. Children dies. Child dies. Children dies. Children are dying all over. And then you find out that your child was a guinea pig. How would that make you feel? Honestly, you cannot tell me that our government does not test on its own citizens and other people in the world.
Well, Tom, how are you going to test any other way?
There's got to be a way. I'm not a big fan of animal testing. I'm definitely not a big fan of testing on babies. Test it on yourself, bastard. I mean, come on. There are people out there that will get paid good money. If you say, hey, I'll give you $20,000. We're going to inject you with this medicine. It may help your issue, but it may kill you. There are so many people out there that are going to say, sign me up. Study on them. Don't do it on unsuspecting people. The people that are dealing with Lyme's disease, if we have a congressional inquiry into this, there's something to it. West Nile virus. There are rumors that that was its own medical experiment that was released into the public to see how our bodies would respond to it. Our government is actively killing us, people. And we're standing by and letting it go. Let me know what you think. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. Let me know what you think. Do you think our government is testing on us? Although this last segment should leave no doubt. But what do you think? And are there other tests that I don't know about? Let me know, ghostseeker4@charter.net, ghostseeker4@charter.net. All right, we will be back. I'm going to talk briefly about some Giants. Actually, what I'm going to do, I'm going to move that to next week. But I'm going to give you a story that I've given before that proves that Giants once existed on this continent. And then next week, we'll go into greater detail on the Giants. But I want to give you the story as a prelude to it. So sit back, relax, open that mind. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back. They are back for year two. Join me Friday, September 20th and Saturday, September 21st in Northern Michigan for another Out of This World event, the second annual Michigan UFO Contact. Spend the weekend listening and learning from special guest speakers who will be lecturing about UFO sightings, experiences, the contact phenomena, and more. Also, be sure to check out their amazing vendor rooms for unique items, creative works, psychic readings, and much, much more. Some of your favorite vendors from last year are returning, plus they have added a great new batch of vendors for this year. Everyone was so pleased with the location last year that they have decided to return to the beautiful Lakeside Resort and Conference Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan. The resort overlooks the largest inland lake in Michigan, is full of windows, and includes a walkout balcony from the conference room and the vendor room. They have a fantastic restaurant inside, and the rooms, you'll agree, they are the best. Join me for another educational and refreshing event, Friday, September 20th, Saturday, September 21st at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Come join me for the Michigan UFO Contact 2. And when you get there, tell them the Paranormal Patriot sent you. For those of you who are searching for Bigfoot, go to the BFRO.net, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and go to their expedition site. You will be linked to the event in Michigan, Thursday, October 3rd through Sunday, October 5th, 2019. Hosted by longtime Paranormal Patriot listener Richard Knox. When you come to this event, there will be daily presentations. They are also going to take people out to visit structures that they believe were made by Sasquatch. You need to come to this event just south of Gaylord. But you need to go to the BFRO.net website for more information. And when you arrive, tell them the Paranormal Patriot sent you.
Make haste, angry subjects, let's be the revolt. If we can't do so in public, smash our screens in the Gulf. Come out from your dungeons, feel the sun on your face. You can't hide behind your comments, you must see this place. Let's not destroy it, don't clean the pace. Slow down, I'm thinking, infect the race. All the hated fetters, don't leave a trace. Children will love, if we give them the grace. The light can win, consume our face. Complacent our pleasure and we can't be late. I hasten all your clever and you move to replace all emotions that are stagnant so we can all embrace. Princess.
Okay, I wanted to talk to you this week about a whole subject of Giants, but it's not going to fit the schedule. So I want to prelude next week's show with a story that, quite honestly, is proven to be correct. It is coming out of Lovelock, Nevada. I've talked about it before, but I want to talk to you about it again because, as I say, it's going to prelude this show. But many Native tribes in the Northeast and the Southwest, they still talk about legends of giants with red hair and how their ancestors fought long and terrible wars against these giants when they were first encountered in North America over 15,000 years ago. Even in Central America, the ancient Aztecs and Mayas recorded their encounters with a terrifying race of giants in the north when they ventured out on expeditions exploring new lands. Now, who are these giants that these many legends speak of? Could it be a part of history that has been overlooked or suppressed by mainstream scholars? Is it possible
the evidence suggests that giants lived here on Earth in the distant past. There have been numerous places across the globe where, quote-unquote, burial sites have been uncovered and giant skeletons have been excavated. Researchers pointed out that in the United States, these mysterious giants have been found in Michigan, Illinois, Tennessee, Arizona, Nevada, among other places. So, in 1924, these myths turned out to be the real deal when researchers discovered in the state of Nevada remains of giant beings in the Lovelock Cave. But let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about how they got hit, how they got there. So the cave, which is located about 20 kilometers south of the town of Lovelock, Nevada, is about 40 feet deep and 60 feet wide. It is an ancient cave that dates back to pre-human in the continent. In prehistoric times, it was under a huge inland lake called Lahontan that covered most of western Nevada. Geologists have determined that the cave was formed by lake currents and wave action. Now, there was a tribe. The tribe was called the Paiutes, and they were a tribe of American Indians native to parts of Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. And they told the first white people the stories of the battles of their ancestors against a race of fierce giants with pale white skin, but they also had red hair. Now, according to the Paiutes tradition, these giants lived in the area for a long time. Now, the Paiutes, they called these giants Sitka, which literally means tool eaters. Now, the tool is a very fibrous water plant from which the giants made rafts, which they used to navigate and escape from the Paiute. They used the rafts to navigate through what remained of Lake Lahontan. According to the legends of the Paiute, these red-haired giants were as tall as 12 feet and were the cruel and evil type, killing and eating the captured Paiutes as food. Well, eventually, the Paiutes revolted. They rebelled. And they went after these giants, and they cornered them into the Lovelock area. These giants went into a cave. The Indians kept lobbing arrows and fire flame arrows into the cave, and then they closed off the cave with boulders. Well, thousands of years later, the mysterious cave where these giants took refuge was rediscovered and excavated. Now, during the course of all these thousands of years, guano, which is bat droppings, had filled this. So they, at that time in the 1920s, guano was pretty heavily wanted. It was a commodity. So they kept digging it out, and they kept finding these stuff, these things. They found these arrows, and they found burnt timbers, and they found a bunch of stuff that correlates to the stories of the Paiutes. After 13 years of excavations, the archaeologists came across incredible findings. During those 13 years, over 10,000 artifacts were recovered, and among them were the mummified remains of two giants. Now, these giants, their skeletons, there was a male and a female. The female skeleton was 21 feet tall, which is 6.5 meters. The male was 24 feet tall, which is about 8 meters. So these are not normal human beings. I've seen giant accounts where the giants were 7 feet, 7.2 feet. Listen, we have people like that today. That to me isn't a giant. That's just a big human being. When you're talking 24 to 21 feet, yes, then you're talking a giant. So these giants were handed over to the Smithsonian and never seen again. And that's where we will go with the next show. What happened to the numerous accounts of giants and their artifacts? What did the Smithsonian do to them? Now keep in mind, long ago, the oxygen content in our atmosphere was much greater, which allowed for things to get bigger. So maybe those giants were the descendants of a time when oxygen was was more prevalent. Lizards were bigger. They were dinosaurs. Bugs were bigger. Everything was bigger because there was more oxygen. More oxygen you have, the bigger things get. So we'll go into that deeper. When we get into that show next week, just remember that story, because I think it's an incredible story because it's verified. All right, so we're going to end the show this week with another listener encounter, because I know you guys love listener encounters. This comes out of Kentucky, and this is a very, very recent encounter. The encounter starts like this. Tom, I know how much you like listener encounters, and I never, ever thought I would have to send you one. But I do. I'm from Alexandria, Kentucky, and I saw something last night, August 2nd, 2019, that I couldn't entirely explain. You see, last night was midnight madness for our school. It's basically some stupid football event about during the summer, but everyone goes to see people they haven't seen over the summer. I went with my two friends and one of their girlfriends. We got there around 10:45. My friends and I were getting pretty bored of the event, and my one friend had just bought some dabs. For those of you who don't know, dabs are like concentrated form of weed. We got in my buddy's car and were looking for a place to smoke. We were driving around this subdivision that had very thick forests all around it. We settled on this abandoned house and decided to smoke in the woods behind it. My friend was setting up his rig and we realized we had forgot the water for the dab rig. A dab rig is basically a bong used for dabs, and it needs water or else it will be very harsh to smoke. Well, we had parked a little bit down the road so that no one would be suspicious. Nobody wanted to go back to the car because it was about a 5-minute walk back, so I decided to go back for the water. While I was walking back, I heard scratching from behind a nearby house. It kind of freaked me out, but I thought it must have been a dog or an animal. I made it to the car and got the water and started heading back. As I was walking by the house where I had heard that scratching, I began to hear it again, but then I heard what sounded like a footstep kicking up gravel when someone started to run. I turned and I saw something that had kept me up all night. Now keep in mind, I'm 6'2", I'm 17 years old, so I'm bigger than most of the guys of my age. And this thing that I saw had me easily beaten height by 2 to 3 feet. It was slender, but with a long, almost stretched out limbs. I couldn't really make out any more details because it was pretty dark. The creature was running from one backyard to another. I never saw its face, only its body. It ran on 2 feet, but it was faster than any person I had seen run. Hell, it was faster than anything that I had seen run. The creature made it from one backyard into the next, which is about 50 to 90 feet in about 3 to 5 seconds. I was standing in the middle of the street about 30 feet away. I stood there for a second in complete shock. Then I ran as fast as I could to my friends. I ran through thorns and bushes to make it back to them. I ran and I told them what I saw. I'm not too sure they believed me, but the panic on my face and in my voice was enough for them to know that I had seen something. We all packed our rig and went back to the car. I have been up all night trying to find out what I saw. The two closest things I have seen on the internet is something called the Dover Demon and something called the Wood Devil. I never saw its face, so I'm not too sure what it was. All I know is I was 100% sober when I saw the creature. That comes from the Paranormal Patriot listener PC. PC, who knows what you saw? There are so many things that we don't comprehend. We can't put our mind around. There are people out there that laugh and scoff at us for our beliefs in the unknown and of cryptids and aliens and ghosts and the supernatural and the paranormal. In my opinion, we that have witnessed these creatures, these spirits, these beings, in my opinion, we're in tune to another dimension. Do I think that the Dover Demon or the Woodman is part of this dimension? No. Do I think we at times are able to glimpse into that dimension? Absolutely. I've seen ghosts. I've seen aliens. I've seen the Glitter Man. I saw something. One of my listeners, and I'll talk about it next week, wanted me to go into greater detail about what I saw outside my window that I talked about last week. They think they may have had a similar encounter. We all have had some type of odd encounter that we cannot explain. Does it mean it's paranormal? Does it mean it's supernatural? No, but it's unexplainable to us, so therefore, it's unexplainable. So if you have an unexplained encounter that you just don't know what it was or what happened, you need to contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. Contact me with these experiences. I am in tune. That's why I'm doing this show. I am in tune to the paranormal, the spiritual, in a way, I think there are times I can see into other realms, other dimensions. I really, truly do, and I know that makes me sound crazy in this day and age, but I really, truly think that there are some people out there that can see through all this. But you have to, and that's why I say open your mind. Open that mind like a parachute. Because you can't see this with a closed mind, because your mind won't let you. But if you have a mind that says anything's possible, then anything is possible. I'm a firm believer in alternate parallel universes. I'm a firm believer that ghosts, aliens, wherever they reside or wherever they come from, they exist. I've seen them with my own two eyes, physically, visually seen them. You will never convince me otherwise. I really, truly want to hear your account. Let me know what you have witnessed, what you are going through at ghostseeker4@charter.net. ghostseeker4@charter.net. If you have a friend, a relative, or an acquaintance that has gone through something, have them contact me. Honestly, guys, there's not a lot that I haven't seen or witnessed. There's a reason I'm doing this show. So contact me, ghostseeker4@charter.net. That'll be the show for this week. Thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Share the show. Remember to go to the Facebook page. You go to the Facebook page, you like it. Bam, there's your name on thousands and thousands of people's airwaves for a week. People will know your name. Send your posts to the Paranormal Patriot. Let me know what my listeners are interested in. Let me know what you want to hear, what you want to see. If you have a video sighting of a UFO or a ghost, bam, send it to me. That's what my listeners want. That's why they go on that page. Contact me, ghostseeker4@charter.net. I will be back next week. I thank you so much for listening. If you need anything at all, want to tell me a story, anything, contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. I love hearing from my listeners. So thank you for listening. That'll be the show this week. We will be back next week. I love y'all. Thank you so much. Spread the word about the Paranormal Patriot. Until we talk again next week, sit back, relax, and open that mind.